This is the Bad Batch podcast on TV Podcast Industries, and we're talking about the Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 10, Identity Crisis, and Episode 11, Point of No Return.
Why children? Are they not adults that could serve this purpose?
There are few adults left with such characteristics. Children are easier to attain and more agreeable to these subjugations. They're unaware of why they're here and what they possess. As you know, M-Count cannot be directly replicated from the source. However, Nala Se knew of another way, which is why she aided in Omega's escape. The young clone's blood is the only binder that's proven to be compatible with their DNA to recreate their M-Count levels, and why Omega must be found. Testing should proceed as planned. We must be prepared for every possibility once she is recovered.
Welcome back, fellow Batchers, to our two-parter podcast where we are looking at The Bad Batch, Season 3, Episodes 10 and 11, Identity Crisis and The Point of No Return. I am one of your hosts, John.
I'm your other host, Derek. Chris, unfortunately, unable to join us for this double episode this week.
We need to put that in quite a lot now.
We do, unfortunately,
yeah. Can we get Chris to record it in a grovelly way?
Yes, we should, actually. I'm not here this week. Yes, put that in there. But if you do want to hear more, Chris, he is podcasting with me on Invincible at the moment. We have our final episode coming out next week on Invincible Season 2. So if you do want to hear more of him, we'll be recording that later this week. And also, we'd love you to get in your thoughts and your feedback on the full Season 2 of Invincible, which we'll be recording on that podcast. So, but that's the other animated show that we're covering. Little bit more violent than Bad Batch. But I will say, these episodes are quite adult of the Bad Batch. These two
very
episodes.
Very adult. Yeah. But very dark, I think. Yeah. I mean, really kind of very dystopian in a way.
Good word.
And it was really, really good. I mean, especially with Identity Crisis, you know, it really is just from the point of view of the Empire.
Yes.
There are no current or previous Bad Batch members in that episode at all.
But maybe a future Bad Batch member.
Well, maybe.
We'll get into it.
Ooh, interesting.
Yep.
Very interesting. What have you spotted that I obviously haven't from the episode?
It's not that deep. I'll get into it as we get into the points.
Absolutely. Before we get into our spoiler-filled discussion, though, of these two episodes, please remember, fellow Batchers, you can head on over to our website at tvpodcastindustries.com, where you can leave a voicemail for our feedback section if you want. Mm-hmm. If you're new, you can also subscribe to any Jedi or Sith podcast catcher of your choice.
Yep.
Also, for feedback, you can send in your thoughts, theories, observations, or comments by email to feedback@tvpodcastindustries.com or over on our spoiler posts on our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/TV Podcast Industries.
Absolutely. And remember, we are also doing our Cantina quiz. We have two more questions to add to the previous nine questions we've asked so far. And you have the chance of getting your hands on some Bad Batch Funko Pops.
Yes.
Five Funko Pops of the Bad Batch. Yeah.
The Bad Batch.
Yes. So stay listening for those questions. They'll be coming up after our discussion about the episode.
Yes. Derek, with that, kick us off with some of the episode details, please.
Well, executive producers for the show are Brad Rao and Jennifer Corbett. These two episodes were written by Amanda Ross Munoz. These are her sixth and seventh episodes of The Bad Batch as well.
Nice. Nice one, Amanda.
Yeah, and episode 10 was directed by Saul Ruiz, and episode 11 was directed by Nate Villanueva, who both directed many episodes of The Bad Batch in the past as
Indeed, they have.
Yeah. John, do you want to tell us what they gave us with your synopsis for The Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 10 and Season 3, Episode 11?
Sure. All over the Empire, children revealing Force sensitivity are snatched up and delivered to Tantis. With Nala Se's imprisonment, Hemlock reluctantly promotes Emery Carr to her vacant position and familiarizes her with Project Necromancer. Witnessing the callous brutality with which the children are treated as specimens, Carr slowly becomes disillusioned with the Empire and the righteousness of her work. Meanwhile, facing the cancellation of his project's funding, Hemlock learns that his clone assassin from Teth has obtained intel on Fi after interrogating Cid and sends him after her. The clone assassin infiltrates Fi's ship during a checkup and hacks her navigation computer, learning about Amiga's whereabouts on Pabu. Just as the Bad Batch prepares to leave the planet, the assassin arrives and confirms their presence, destroying the Marauder and calling in an Imperial strike team. With their means of escape cut off, the rest of the Batch try to evade their pursuers while Hunter leaves to steal a gunship. But after Hunter fails, Amiga decides to surrender herself, both to spur the people of Pabu and to enable the Batch to trace her to Tantis. Crosshair's attempt to plant a tracker fails, and the assassin leaves with Omega on board.
Oof, yeah, as I say, some quite heavy episodes, the two of them.
Just a bit. Mm, yeah. I mean, effectively, Wrecker in a coma,
yeah,
unconscious, after the Marauder, which is now a goner,
yeah,
exploded. R.I.P. Marauder.
Absolutely.
Hope they don't get a nuggety ship afterwards. I hope the replacement is worthy of being the Marauder's replacement.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That's kind of been their home for the last couple of seasons outside of Pabu. And all they've got left are a pair of goggles and Amiga's toy now of their home.
Yeah, a Loathcat plushie.
Yeah, yeah.
God, there's so much merchandise in the galaxy far, far away.
There certainly is. Certainly is. But will we get into our blaster points, John?
Absolutely. Let us kick on with our blaster point number one. Simply titled Cad Bane.
Welcome back, Cad Bane.
Yes, with a cocktail stick in mouth. I wonder if it had a cherry or an olive on it beforehand.
I feel at one point it was a cigar that was drawn into his mouth, or a cigarillo, was it, that Clint Eastwood used to have as the man with no name in Westerns? Because that's the kind of look Cad Bane always has that he comes
definitely.
out of the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Well, absolutely. But Cad Bane doing the machinations of the Empire in sort of being... Well, first off, the creatures, the Force-sensitive kid, which is effectively ratted out by Ball Face, as far as I can see.
Yes, the spider-appendaged neighbor. I think it's someone that you wouldn't want to live beside.
No, not really. Yeah. And like he seems quite disappointed with the amount of credits that he gets for that intel. I wondered what that was about.
I was thinking about that. I actually think it's not particularly disappointed about the amount of credits he gets. It's the way they're thrown at him. It's almost like, I don't know whether you're...
I guess. You've disrespected me somehow. Yeah.
Like the Bible story of Judas, where he sells out Jesus and gets the pieces of silver thrown at him and then suddenly realizes, what have I done here? This is what I think the neighbor's got, because it's really like from Cad Bane as he walks past, it's just like, thanks for the tip, and just throws the money in his face. It's not even like, congratulations, you've done something amazing for the Empire. It's like, look what you've done. You've sold out your neighbor. You know, you've left your neighbor on the floor and her child has been taken away
absolutely.
From her while she
sleeps. The other two people at the market where the child's abilities kind of get realized by their neighbor are kind of like, don't say stuff like that. You know, it could bring all amounts of trouble.
Yeah.
You know, they can tell, but they're, you know, they're smart enough not to say anything. I mean, interestingly, I was like, did Cad Bane kill the kid's mother?
No, I think he knocks her out, so she's going to wake up.
Yeah, well,
to
that's
her child
it.
Being stolen.
It's only on the second time that I watched this that I kind of saw the blue stun rings that you normally see from the Stormtrooper's blaster.
Exactly.
So I think it was that she was literally stunned rather than killed. But the first time I was like, oh, this is really dark. Absolutely. Killing a mum.
Murder the mum and steal the child. Yeah. That would be really dark.
So I was like, okay.
But still pretty bad, I guess. Like, waking up to your child being gone is, you know, would you want to be just dead as a parent, you know? He's taken away from her home while she's knocked out. Interestingly, just because of the complaint that we had last week about, not complaint, but the comment that we made last week about Asajj Ventress putting Omega through all of these tests to see if she had a high MK, Kent. Cad Bane came prepared with his Kent tester, like the one Qui-Gon Jinn used on Anakin back in The Phantom Menace. So he has that testing kit, and it takes him about 3.5 seconds, not an entire episode, to check if this kid has the high Kent.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah. I think Jedi or former Sith just run differently, really,
they do.
Don't they?
They
have to do it the hard way.
Yeah.
So that they know. It's not just that they need to do a little sort of blood test type thing.
I think you'll find...
That would be beneath them.
I think you'll find Qui-Gon Jinn was quite an experienced Jedi when he tested Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
But Asajj Ventress may just not have had the equipment on board. She wasn't going out trying to find people with high M counts. It seems like Cad Bane has pretty much traded in this for quite a long time.
Yeah.
We heard Fennec Shand saying that she's never taken one of these jobs to find someone with a high M count. I wonder now if Fennec realized that it was children that were being stolen and decided that she wouldn't partake of that.
Yeah, maybe. And interestingly, you know, he says later on in the episode, yeah, I'm good at this. Mm-hmm. You know, when Emery Carr asks him how many he's gotten, he says, well, I'm pretty good at this. That's a nice little reference back to season 2 of The Clone Wars, the episode Children of the Jedi, where he's also capturing younglings, Jedi younglings as well. So yes, he's got a long history of basically, I guess, punching below his weight.
Well, absolutely.
I mean, they're not as such, they're not risky bounties that he's doing because they're children, primarily.
Yeah, unless they use the Force on them or know how to use the Force.
Unless they know, exactly.
Yeah.
But generally, they don't,
exactly.
I would think.
Exactly.
Because they may not know how Force-sensitive they are anyway, at least not these children that have been brought to Tantis.
Certainly not this baby, effectively. And interestingly, when he meets up with Emery Carr to hand over this Force-sensitive child, interestingly, Emery Carr asks him where the child is from.
Yeah.
And Bane's response is, asking questions like that will reveal more intention than you wanted to reveal. And he doesn't tell her. So this child has no idea where its home is. It's only a baby.
Yeah.
And nobody else does either. The tie has been severed effectively by Cad Bane not revealing. So this child is now on the other side of the galaxy, not knowing any way to get home to its mom.
Well, that's it. Yeah. No idea.
Awful.
Dreadful.
But still great to see Cad Bane back.
Oh, definitely.
A character I love to see on screen.
He's a great character. Yeah. Great character.
And also kind of cool seeing Toto, his heavily put-upon droid, played once again by Seth Green in there. But
yeah, I did like that sequence with Toto where he's like, I'm not a nanny droid. But, you know, again, another plushie placed to keep the kid from screaming, you know?
Yeah.
And then...
Ooh, I've done it.
I guess, but they just lock it up in a, like, it looks like a pet travel basket, but
exactly.
Even more locked down than that. So,
yeah.
I could just soundproof it.
You could.
That would be the end of it,
so,
I guess.
So, maybe a small kindness from Cad Bane to give it its teddy
or
bear.
Toto, even.
Toto, to give it its teddy
exactly.
bear. Okay. Yes, yes.
But
Cad just wants it shut up.
No,
that's
exactly.
Right. Yeah.
But... with speaking about Emery Carr, let us get on to our blaster point number 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the promotion of Dr. Emery Carr onto Project Necromancer.
Yes, chief scientist. That is the easiest promotion opportunity
I've
ever seen. Wow, I've had
work interviews like that. Or I could just go... I want to be Secretary General.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. I've worked by your side. You trust me? Yeah, no problem. Here you go. Here's the keys to the castle.
Here's the pay rise.
Yeah.
Excellent.
That would be nice. That would be nice.
Perfect.
Here's the pay rise. No extra work for you. You're doing it all already. Yeah, that'd be awesome. So maybe there is benefit in working for the Empire, John.
Absolutely.
Career opportunities come up quite often. Sometimes the leader of the Empire will strangle someone in a position that you wanted to attain.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Loads of opportunities in the Empire for promotion.
But
yes.
Here is where I reveal that I believe that Emery Carr might be someone that could join the Bad Batch in the future. She's a clone. She's been working in the Empire. She's becoming very disillusioned with the Empire.
Just
so
a bit.
By the end of this episode, I feel she at least will be an ally to the Bad Batch in the future because her position is turning, but I do wonder if she may even join the Bad Batch in the future.
Yeah, that's a possibility now that you say it.
She's got them goggles that that old tech used to have.
She does have them there goggles. Yeah. And certainly, you know, as the course of this episode goes on, you know, from the treatment of the children that are already part of Project Necromancer. You know, so, I mean, two levels here. There's assets in the sub-level container chamber, which, so we haven't seen that.
That's
so
right.
So I thought, actually, when Hemlock was taking Dr. Carr actually to the vault, I thought we were going to see that space with all the canisters that presumably are housing something, that we were going to see that.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden it was like a nursery and I was like,
it's like, wait, hang on a second.
what's happening?
Where's the vault?
Because the vault sounds much more, or should, much more secure and intimidating than the sub-level container chamber. But I guess that, yes, it is what it says on the tin. Tons of containers containing something or someone down there. But ultimately,
we haven't seen it yet.
Shown her that. He does discuss that. But because when Emery speaks to Nala Say, she does say, well, then you would have seen the, you know, the sub-level containers.
Okay. I missed that.
But there, we only really get to see her in the vault with the children, which means that that sub-level chamber is going to be really spicy.
Has to be.
Yeah.
Has to be.
Saucy even, I think.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Are you hungry?
Maybe.
Okay, thought so.
Chicken-y even.
And also, we did see Dr. Hemlock looking at some containers in a higher chamber, so that's not what's in the vault. He was looking in, he takes a lift down from it, so and then says to Emery Kara that going down to the vault, so there's a third location.
It's not the one with all the hieroglyphics on the floor, which is what where we saw the Emperor at the start of this season.
Exactly.
And it's actually the kind of almost conning tower that tower within the structure, and that is where we saw the clone assassin first of all, when I commented that he was showing some shins.
He was at the bottom of the elevator, the lift, where Dr. Hemlock takes it down. But we do see Hemlock looking in one of them, closing it up. We don't see what's inside it. And then he's looking at his data pad, and it looks really like operative or the assassin. Yeah. And then he tells the operative later in the episode that none of his fellow operatives are available to do the, or ready to do the job.
Yeah, they're not ready.
Yet.
They haven't cooked enough.
Yeah, so it seems like there's a few of them in there waiting to go at some point.
Yeah,
getting ready. So anyway.
But actually, one of the reasons why I said it was very dystopian, this is because just the treatment of the children. I mean, we have Emery Carr still having that kind of emotional side to her, where, in a sense, she does begin to interact with at least one of the children through Eva, because Eva is trying to talk to her.
Yes.
But it's how Hemlock really says, you know, limit your social interactions with the children. They're nothing more than scientific assets.
Yes.
You know, they're specimens. When asked why is it children, because they take to the experiments better and it's easier to be subjugated for them to be subjugated. And it's that dystopian divorcing of the, okay, humanity is obviously the wrong word because they're not human, but their own emotions and life, effectively.
Yeah, exactly. They're just assets to be treated
like a Bunsen burner or a test tube. They're just assets, and they have worth for this project.
Absolutely.
Nothing more. You know, completely dehumanized from anything. And it's something that you see Emery Carr struggle with. You know, she does try to do it, but certainly Eva is that sort of, it's that little point that's caused the chink. And when she goes to see Nala Say pushes her, you know, what will you do, Emery? You do have power here and you can do something about it.
Yeah, Nala Say's job was to ensure that the Empire didn't get Omega, she was able to do that. She achieved her objective, and now these children will look to Emery Carr. Yeah, I thought it was really on point to say to Emery Carr, you have the power to stop this. Carr saying, I don't have power at all. And then it just left hanging in the air with, or do you? Do you have this power?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, it finishes with, in a sense, Emery Carr feeling a bit crappy because Eva knows that she lies, mm-hmm. you know, that they didn't keep her other cellmate, Jack, safe, and that they just want to go home. You know, that this trust has kind of been lost mm-hmm. between Eva and Carr. Yeah. And Emery gives her Amiga's doll that she made whilst in Tantis, almost just to give that childhood back to Eva.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I thought was really good, again, but not something that Hemlock would allow at all.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I will give huge credit to the casting director for the show. They don't have to cast many voice people for the show generally, because Dee Bradley Baker does so many voice casts. But here, the casting choice for Eva is the cutest child voice I've ever heard. It's like, it's just perfect. It's just the way she goes, Dr. Carr, will you tell me how I can get home? Will you look into that for me? You know,
it's kind of like the Simpsons Spelling Bee episode. Absolutely. Where as soon as Eva sort of says anything, everyone's like,
oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Perfect casting.
But, you know, it is, they just want to go home. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you can actually deduce that Nala Sayer said, well, you're only here temporarily. You will get home eventually. But, I mean, even to the point where Jax does try to escape from the vault, but ultimately is not only stun blasted mm-hmm. by one of the guards, but is isolated then for two rotations, you know, as punishment. So, you know, and this is why Eva knows that Carr lied to her, because Jax wasn't kept safe mm-hmm. And he was just trying to get home. So this is really a depressing predicament Absolutely. For these three kids.
Well, especially because we've seen Tantus. We know how difficult the facility it is to escape. We know the planet outside is a very dangerous place to be. And Jax is kind of believes at the end of the corridor, there's a door that will get him out and get him home. He's on a different planet. He probably woke up in the same way as the child did. Getting there, woke up after being knocked out and stolen from his planet.
He has no idea what's between him and the outside world.
Exactly.
A lot more levels than you think, Jax.
Yep.
But so the promotion, and dare I say it, the descent into rebellion of Dr. Emery Carr here.
I think so. I think so. There's just one other thing that I want to talk about in this point. I know this is awful. Finding out that the Empire are stealing children who have a high M count from their families and bringing them into this experiment, effectively. We'd mentioned last week that we had a theory that what was happening with Amiga's blood was that the Emperor's blood was being put into it. What's actually happening is it's these kids' blood with the high M count, and it's being able to be sustained in her blood. So that means they can clone high M counts, which is the test for the Emperor in the future, right? That's the way it's happening. It's not they're using the Emperor's blood, they're using these kids' bloods to do it. But I do want to say, because we were talking about it after watching the episode, I do want to say one of the things that is hardly ever talked about, really, is that the Jedi did this as well when the Jedi was at the height of its power. They also took children from their families.
That's true.
Before they were fully grown, a kid like Anakin, who was about 8 or 9 when we meet him first, was considered too old to train by the Order. They had to get special dispensation to train him. All the other kids that were in the Jedi Order.
It was more consensual, though, wasn't it? I mean, they were given the choice, if I remember.
Well, the youngest kids that are brought to the Jedi are brought as babies, who exhibit some high level of M count, and then are trained in the Jedi ways. The Jedi Order now is gone, so the Empire are now taking these kids for their purposes. But it's just the reason why I say it is because there has been a lot of stories, a lot of extended universe stories in Star Wars that kind of talk about that the kids don't know their families. They've been put into this order, a religious order almost, that's telling them how they must live their lives. They can't have relationships, all that kind of stuff. I think there's even a quote about Obi-Wan Kenobi not knowing whether he has a brother or not. He has a vague memory of a brother.
Yeah.
Before joining the Jedi
Order. Fine line then, isn't it? Between good and evil.
Mm-hmm. So,
or are they just both evil? Or evil justified as good, depending on how you spin it.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's a complicated grey area. Much more complicated than it was when we were kids. And we just thought they picked up laser swords and were knights of the Republic.
So, excellent. Yeah. Good point. Well made. Yes.
There you go.
But with the crumbling of all we know about the Jedi after Derek's little assertion, let us move on to Blaster Point 3. Yes, so Blaster Point number 3, the Trandoshan, Feed the Pirate, and the Operative.
Hmm.
Harking back to, where Hemlock is talking to the Operative, we get to hear very briefly that he has interrogated the Trandoshan, a.k.a. Sid.
That's right, yes. Yeah. No return of Rhea Perlman for this season so far. But yeah, it looks like Sid eventually did turn on the Bad Batch, which we had suspected she might all the way back to first meeting her. We heard many times, don't trust her, from a number of people around the Bad Batch, but they have left, they've gone off.
Well, she brought the Empire to her bar, she's betrayed them anyway.
That's true.
I can't imagine the interrogation involved sort of, you know, knuckle screws or sort of, you know, slicing and dicing in any way.
Nope. Sid, don't do that. Nope.
But certainly you just never know, because he said interrogation and the Operative is, you know, does come across very menacing when he says it.
Yes, but, it does.
Interesting that she's ultimately pointed to Fee the Pirate here as one of Amiga's associates, or an associate of the Bad Batch, with which he should follow up on that lead. And Hemlock gives him, you know, that permission. Certainly doesn't want him to fail again. He believes he's already failed him once.
Absolutely.
So it is certainly being fairly tough with his Operative. But interestingly, this whole discussion with the Operative, it's very immediate after a conversation with Tarkin,
yes.
You know, the consummate accountant for the Empire, you know, always concerned about financing resources and whether there are the right outcomes. I mean, it sounds like my day job, to be honest.
Yeah, mine too.
And, but interestingly, he's saying, you know, if it doesn't give the outputs, then it will be pulled, and it won't be a good thing for Hemlock either. I mean, Tarkin's quite, you know, menacing here to Hemlock, and it won't bode well for you either.
Absolutely.
And interestingly, though, I also feel as though Tarkin was fishing for information here, in that he doesn't, he knows this project is on his books, but he also hasn't been given the clearance by the Emperor. But this is a very small group here that truly know the project and the experiments that are going on at Tantis.
And you're right. I think it does feel like it rankles with Tarkin that there would be any information that he would not be privy to, that the Emperor would trust someone like Dr. Hemlock over him. That's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Because, you know, Tarkin has always been that character that climbs the rungs, and he wants to be at the top of the Empire, effectively.
Yeah.
So that's quite interesting to see him here.
So quite interesting. But later on then, in episode 11, Point of No Return, we see the Operative stalking Fee as she goes to get her ship filled up with fuel.
Do you know, I thought this was so smart.
Yeah.
He's not there to interrogate her. He's not there to get the information out of her. He goes straight in surreptitiously onto her ship to take her Navi computer, access it, break her encryption, and find out what planet she's visited often, as his way of finding where the Bad Batch could possibly be.
Absolutely. Mm. So it's interesting, isn't it? Because all of that is very tech. You know, this theory that tech could be the clone.
Yes.
And yet,
not Echo. Sorry about that again.
Tech. And yet, more so in this episode, in episode 11, I found the Operative sounding more like Crosshair with with it, the sound distorted.
Yes.
And also in the intonation of how the operative delivers lines, especially later on, once he has reconned Pabu, felt very cross her. And then all of a sudden I was going, and of course, then you realize, and it's in plain sight all the time, that the operative carries the sniper rifle.
It is, yeah.
Or the sniper blaster.
Yeah.
You know?
And I suppose one of the theories we had early on this season as well, we'd seen that hand tick that Crosshair has. So is the new theory that potentially he's a clone of Crosshair?
Yeah,
and because
I
think so. He's been cloned, Crosshair's having this reaction.
The PTSD, from all the procedures being done. Yeah.
There you go. So potentially the reason why we haven't seen their faces, we thought it was because they brought tech back. That actually they haven't brought tech back. They've cloned Crosshair.
Yeah.
Interesting theory, John. I like it a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if they've found tech and he hasn't decomposed enough, then potentially if there's a viable sample, who knows?
It could be tech. Yeah.
So we'll see. No, it could be another set of clones that, you know, might be in the evil mind of Dr. Hemlock to do clones of tech as well.
So another theory maybe in the bank for who that could possibly be, because we still haven't seen the face of the operative.
Yeah.
And we're still calling him the operative. They're not being very clear. But I see that theory that he could possibly be Crosshair.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too.
And just one final thing at this point as well, because it should be mentioned that Fee, while she doesn't catch the operative and doesn't know for definite that someone's on board, she does have a suspicion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And gets called away.
It's that feeling that she gets. And Hunter has one as well before all the stuff goes down
on
Pabu.
That's a Hunter move.
No, absolutely. But yeah, with Fee, she also realizes, you know, whether it's that the air has gone colder, you know, it's almost like this operative is the Ringwraith from The Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
And all the spiders and the centipedes and all the creepy crawlies all sort of trying to escape this evil.
Yes.
And Fee has just picked up on it there. But he does manage to escape and get off her ship before she realizes, because ultimately she was interrupted by the robot Ollie with the bill.
Well, basically,
ultimately.
Yes, the bill comes due.
Yeah.
Yes.
And interestingly, Ollie is voiced by the actor who voiced Anakin Skywalker throughout the Clone Wars as well, Matt Lanter.
Yes. So just shows you that even though he's playing a different character, he's still on the side of the Empire, right? He still does anything to protect the Empire.
I guess.
Kind of.
Yeah, not knowingly, though.
Or is it? He hears the alarm and doesn't alert Fee that there's an alarm going aboard in a ship. He just kind of shrugs his shoulders as droids do.
No, it goes off. Like, the operative manages to turn it off, and he's like, okay, maybe it wasn't this.
Right. And whatever.
It's in the fuel line.
Maybe he thought he set off the alarm by trying to...
Yeah, I think he did.
By trying to fuel up the ship.
Don't you be besmirching old Ollie,
poor Ollie,
the robot.
I'm besmirching Matt Lanter, who played Anakin Skywalker, who we didn't see turning into
Matt
Darth
Lanter.
Vader. I do love Matt Lanter.
He's done nothing but voice Ollie.
Yes, that's true. I think that's it for our Blaster Point 3, John.
Let us get into our Blaster Point 4. Yes, it's recon at Pabu as the operative heads on over to Pabu in the Outer Rim. We're using the same place as Asajj Ventress from the previous episode
to
sort of hide his spacecraft.
Yeah, we know Ventress got to the planet without anybody detecting her there.
And their ships have a lot of different gizmos as well. It's able to interfere with the Marauder's tracking system so that it appears as though there's nothing coming from the ocean towards the island. We see that.
Very good.
So it almost has a stealth mode because I was wondering, you know, it's a real weak point for ships with people that, you know, the Bad Batch don't want to ever come to Pabu to sort of infiltrate into Pabu or onto the island. So I was thinking, oh, Hunter, you should have put up sensors in that cave after Sarah Ventress.
Yes.
But alas, no, he's not. See?
Yeah.
I'd be a better hunter and tracker.
Well,
that's what I would have done.
They are more taken up with getting off the planet. They are realize that Pabu's not safe after the discussion with Asajj Ventress last week and are packing everything up to leave Pabu. So I think that's the major concern. One small trip from Omega to leave stuff in the historical archives that are kept on Pabu. We learned about that when we saw Pabu the first time, that they, because everybody here is running from the Empire, they've left all their society. So they have one central place where they store meaningful items that represent their home and represent who they are. So here we have Omega leaving the goggles of tech and her teddy bear, as we mentioned.
Yeah, her loath cat plushie.
Her loath cat plushie, as we mentioned up front.
Loads of plushies.
Yeah.
In the galaxy far, far away. Yes, with the mayor of Pabu's daughter, Liana. And I mean, yet you see actually as well, you see, I think, the three young clones as well from earlier in this season enjoying ice cream because Wrecker actually fancies a nice cold ice cream because he is the one lugging all the supplies and rations onto the Marauder in preparation for their departure.
Mm-hmm.
And
a little help from Gonki. Or maybe just a little bit of
a little criticism Gonki, but from Gonki. I think Gonki is criticizing because I like that Wrecker gets into full blown argument with him really and says, "Well, I'll leave you behind."
I think
Gonki has said, "Well, you could always leave yourself behind." Exactly. So obviously, there's no love lost there between old Gonkster and Wrecker.
Even though Gonki was, as I've been saved at least three times by Wrecker.
And again, in this episode.
Yeah. Maybe it's the manner in which Wrecker seems to save him. Remember the last time he was upside down on Wrecker's back, wasn't he? Being carried through the forest when they met the three clones last time. But it is a nice moment just seeing the three young clones being on Pabu. Again, this place is such a paradise and they have found a much better place than where they were when Hunter and Wrecker found them.
Yeah.
At least at the start of the episode.
Well, absolutely. And then Hunter gets that sort of feeling that something isn't right. Mm-hmm. And it's immediately, we need to go. Like, he's very much right. We can't stall any longer. We've got to go. And in them getting ready to leave, making their way through town to get to the Marauder, the operative does get his confirmation, gets his eyes on Omega and calls in the strike team from Tantis that he's already put on a standby, ready to come, and then fires the explosive devices onto the Marauder. I can't believe they've destroyed that ship.
I know, it's such a cool ship. Yeah, really like it. but I it's just another touch. You know, we mentioned before some of the things that's really cool about Bad Batch is when you see the characters using their special abilities, seeing Crosshair being able to use his amazing sniping ability is always cool. Seeing Hunter recognize the kind of movement in the air that determines there's something going on here. And I know it's only a tiny one, but seeing Wrecker realize that there is explosives nearby, it's almost what happens. It's like if anybody else had been there, maybe they wouldn't have noticed it, but he's so attuned to explosives that he notices instantly and is able to save himself and Gonki. So,
and he does wrap old Gonkster up in his arms,
big old as he realized,
as again. Then the explosion throws them into the water. But the point is that the operative has managed to lay eyes on Omega, confirm that it's her, and get the message to back to Tantis.
Absolutely, and put Wrecker to a coma too.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I know. Unconscious Wrecker taken out of action for what is to come, which I think leads on to our blaster point number 5. Yes.
A prediction comes true, John.
Yeah, the Empire arrives.
Yes, you predicted that at some point in the future of the season we would see a massive Imperial ship in the skies of Pabu. Did you know it was only going to be an episode and a half later?
No, I didn't. But it was very kind of definitely knew that the Empire was going to arrive.
Yeah.
But I do love these scenes of, okay, it's not a Star Destroyer. It's one of the Clone Wars ships. Mm. The sort of proto Star Destroyers, yes. Which I can't quite remember now what the name of them are.
Should have looked that up.
Yep. But, you know, ever since you had that Star Destroying hovering over the city in the desert in Rogue One,
mm-hmm.
you know, having Star Destroyers in atmosphere, mm-hmm. low level, really, really cool.
It's so cool.
And they're so menacing. And like with Andor, with the menace of the Star Destroyer going through, you know, through the atmosphere, and also then Thrawn's Star Destroyer with the at the Witch's Tower, mm-hmm.
In Ahsoka,
the other side of the galaxy. It's just such a great look, so menacing as well. You know, so again, we get this for Pabu.
Yeah, it's just the sheer volume of troops that come out of those ships as well. You know, there's a massive amount of drop ships that are coming in, all with, you know, five or six troops inside them. And the entire town of Pabu, the entire village of Pabu, is just completely overwhelmed by the sheer number of
It's real blitzkrieg type mm-hmm. tactics. Loads of ships coming down from above. They blow up the skiffs, the fishing skiffs, and other ships.
I've got it as space and sea ships.
To cut off their escape routes. They jam the comms and effectively lock down the town and start going from house to house to try and find the Bad Batch, who've effectively at this point sort of ducked and run for cover in order so that to evade capture from them. But I mean, you know, it's slowly, it reminds me of the line from Andor, you know, the Empire slowly sort of strangling the galaxy, and this in miniature on Pabu, you know?
Absolutely. It's a tiny correction because I think it's kind of important as well. The operative actually says they're there to find Omega. If the others get in the way, kill them all.
Yeah, eliminate them.
Eliminate them. So they're not there for the Batch. It's just Omega that they want to take.
I mean,
which is really brutal.
It's dark days at the moment in the Bad Batch with everything going on. And I mean, it was really efficient, the Empire coming down and doing this. But I kind of really liked how it played out then, you know, where you have Hunter trying to find a way to get off the planet by trying to get hold of one of the drop ships, the transport ships that have come down. You have Wrecker being taken to AZ, you know, so they can get medical attention, and Omega and Crosser, but all, you know, kind of together just trying to evade capture.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I love the fact that here we have Omega then the realization that she is willing to give herself up here and to surrender because they, you know, she knows for definite they are there for her and she doesn't want the people of Pabu or indeed her brothers to suffer in any way. So is willing to give herself up with a plan that she has a tracker on her person and that Crosshair will shoot a tracker onto the ship that takes her off planet
in case they take her tracker away.
But again, I love how Crosshair is kind of like, but you don't want to go back to Tantis. You know, that's where they're going to take you. That there's the too many variables around the tracker. It's not certain. And he's kind of trying to sort of dissuade her from going, but ultimately, you know, there is this huge moment where she willingly gives herself over to the Empire and to the operative, really.
Yeah. And also, she says the major reason is because they're trying to get back to Tantus and they've tried everything they can think of to find the coordinates for Tantus and they can't get them, which makes it even more concerning that they take her calm away almost immediately, exactly as Crosshair predicted. And while under attack from stormtroopers, Crosshair misses the tracker on the ship
as
they leave.
Yeah, he's just too late. I feel if those stormtroopers hadn't spotted him, he would have been able to get the tracker onto the operative's ship.
Yeah, whereas it just goes straight into the drink.
Yeah, he failed. It was just too too late for him to get the aim.
Yeah.
Right. Because I loved how, you know, you saw if the ship had stayed where it was, it possibly would have connected with it.
Yeah.
But exactly. The ship was taking off, and so all of a sudden was out of range from where Crosser had aimed at. So harsh. Yeah, really harsh. Certainly seeing Amiga in the ship again, almost doing a bit of a Jedi thing there, like almost going into a meditative look to me. You know, maybe it was just to keep herself calm so on, rather than anything particularly force wise.
Yeah.
But you know, probably hoping that a tracker had gotten on the ship from Crosser, but sadly not. So
yes, at least she has hope. You know, I'm even more concerned. Like, we saw how bad it was for her last time, and she pretty much had the run of the facility, and Nalasay there helping her out. But now they know her worth. They've worked out that she is massively valuable for them as a specimen, as an asset, and we've seen how they treat the kids who were specimens in the last episode.
She's going straight to the vault. Yeah. No chance of plush quarters somewhere else on the Tantis, but
do not pass go, do not collect your 200 quid.
Straight to the vault.
Straight to jail,
I mean, the other thing as well is quickly on this final point with when the Empire arrives, you know, Hunter sort of getting onto the dropship, really, really good. But again, the operative kills the pilot.
Yes.
And doesn't aim for Hunter, which is kind of interesting, but with the aim ultimately to crash the ship into the sea and that Hunter dies. But Hunter does manage to sort of get himself away from the plummeting vehicle and manages to get out of the drink safely.
You know, I was absolutely convinced, I'm glad you were talking about this, because I was absolutely convinced that after Hunter gets out of the water, you know, we hear that conversation between the operative and the troopers around him, where he says he's taken care of two of them, which will be Wrecker, who's in a coma, and Hunter, who he's taken out of the air. It sounds like he thinks Hunter's dead. And then Hunter meets up with Batcher, who's did a little attack himself on the troopers. Well done, Batcher, saving some of the people from Pabu. But I was convinced that the two of them would join together, find the operative ship, and get aboard so that they could go with them, hide aboard. They could go with them, find out where Tantis is. I thought that was just how it was all going to play out. The credit was to roll at the end, and then Hunter arrives back with Crosshair and Wrecker, and realizes that Amiga's gone. And I was going, oh, okay, so they have no plan here. There's no ability here.
Well, that's true.
And they have no way of finding Tantis because they've tried all their methods to find Tantis.
Well, when he got of the sea and he was met by Batcher there. No, I had the same feeling that he was somehow going to be stowed away on the operative ship.
Or he was putting his own tracker on
Jazz hands something. Surprise. Exactly. You know?
And here's my pet, Batcher, bite his face off or something.
Exactly. Yeah. But no. Alas.
Yeah, it seems like there's
they are
no plan.
Back to square one effectively here.
Yeah. And without Amiga and her being going back to Tantis now. Oh. Yep, dark couple of episodes. But overall, John, what did you think of the episodes?
I absolutely loved these two episodes. For Identity Crisis episode 10, I gave that 4.5 scientific assets out of 5. Really bleak, really dystopian. I liked, actually, that there was this moment of the Empire point of view, or maybe Emery Carr's to some extent as well. I really like that. It just showed you the bleakness of, I guess, the Empire, really, as did then episode 11. Episode 11, I gave the point of no return 4.5 flaming skiffs out of 5. I think in total, both of these I'd give 5 out of 5.
Right.
You know, I'd give 5 ice cream cones out of 5.
Okay.
You know, I thought they were really, really good.
Really strong.
Overall for the two of them.
Yeah.
Just all quite bleak. And I mean, the Bad Batch, as I say, up a creek without a skiff anymore.
That's
so,
Yeah,
I really enjoyed these two episodes. I loved how Amiga stepped up there. You know, it felt real mature, this coming of age here. And Crosshair, you know, really kind of concerned about what she's proposing there. And I kind of really liked, as I said, just getting to see Hemlock with Emery and Emery's slow sort of realization of the reality of her work, you know,
absolutely.
Especially from that little meeting with Nala Say, who's still locked up.
Yeah,
so yeah, absolutely fantastic two episodes. Derek, what about yourself?
Yeah, they were really, really good episodes. This this moment here, four episodes from the end of the season, and all hope is gone. You know, I am kind of glad they didn't destroy Pabu,
which
was something that we were suspecting was going to happen, especially with the arrival of the Empire here at Pabu. They didn't destroy it. It wasn't burnt to the ground or something like that. The fact that Omega stands up to save them, because everything was looking very dark there for the people of Pabu.
Absolutely.
So I think there's even that moment with the operative who says, hang on a second, all I've done is destroy your ships. I can do a lot worse. I will I will burn down all of your homes. I will end it for everybody here if you don't give me
Amigas. It's one of those moments where you go, okay, Pabu's getting a garrison of stormtroopers.
Yes.
You know.
That could still happen, though, yeah.
Absolutely.
But no, another really, really good episode. And yeah, I'm loving this. Can't believe we've got four episodes left of the entire show.
It's going to fly by.
It is. But I need a drink after that episode. I need something to calm my nerves, John. Let's head over to the cantina.
Yes, absolutely. Let us go there, fellow quizzers, fellow batchers, to the Star Wars Bad Batch Cantina Quiz.
Mm-hmm.
We have two questions for this cantina quiz for episode 10 and 11.
Yes.
Let us kick off with our question 10. What specimen designation are Eva and Jax known by?
I promise I'm not going to give a clue of this one.
No, you're not.
It's the reason why we didn't mention it during the episode, but but one of the numbers indicates how many Cad Bane may have actually taken.
It's true.
Quite a high number.
Yeah, it is.
Considering it's children with Force-capable abilities, it's quite a high number that Cad Bane could have brought in, especially if only certain bounty hunters are capturing kids with
special abilities.
So yes, two of them there. John, do you want to get the question one more time?
Yes. What specimen designation are Eva and Jax known by?
Great stuff. What's the question for episode 11?
For question 11, how many explosive devices does the operative shoot onto the Marauder?
How many explosive devices does it take to destroy a Marauder?
Effectively, yes.
Yes. I'm sure everybody was watching really closely there to that one, so they should have that number.
Yes.
John, question one more time.
How many explosive devices does the operative shoot onto the Marauder?
Great stuff. That's question 10 and question 11 to add to the other questions that we've asked throughout the season so far. You can find all of those questions over on our website at tvpodcastindustries.com. There's a pub quizzes button up at the top. Just click on that, go into the Bad Batch Cantina Quiz, and you'll see all the questions in there. Put all your answers together at the end of the season. Email us into feedback@tvpodcastindustries.com with your answers, and you could be in with a chance of getting your hands on those Bad Batch Funko Pops.
Yes, absolutely. Let us move on to our feedback on these two episodes. First up on Facebook, Dr. Bob Phillips says, Darkness Falls. The kidnap, emotional abuse, and objectification of children followed by a witch hunt with the Batch outgunned and outplayed. Mm-hmm. Can the doll motif be the way we see hope maintained as the terror sweeps across the galaxy? Will Pabu, if it survives, think about getting better security in that sea cave?
Mm-hmm.
Will Emery manage to keep up Nalase's work and hide Amiga's true mutational capabilities in time? Excellent stuff. Well, that is it. The doll motif certainly, I think, represents hope here. And softness, I guess.
Even though it's made of straw, the one that memory, which is not that soft.
No, exactly. Yeah. And it really is the darkness falling. I mean, that objectification, I think it's just, it really plays into that sci-fi dystopian stuff that always intrigues me. I'm always fascinated by it. And indeed, you know, what you can see back from the 1930s with science, and where, you know, experiments were being done on people, new things being done, you know, and not being told about them or against their will. And it
absolutely
really plays into that. And I think, you know, it's so dystopian for, you know, as we always say, an animation, but it does deal in that. And that is just the reality. The Bad Batch deals in this darkness in a way that actually is really accessible and has the little motifs of hope, as you say, Dr. Bob. So yeah, good stuff.
But I do think the line of the two episodes that is the darkest of all is without doubt Dr. Hemlock saying that the reason why they choose children is because they're more agreeable to subjugation. It's just such a dark way of describing why they don't use adults for this. And of course, you know, they don't have that many adults as options anymore because they've killed a lot of the Jedi.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah. Totally with you on the sea cave security. Yep. Even some kind of massive portcullis on it or something.
Yes,
just
something.
To stop infiltration onto the island.
Maybe a massive radar that can't be tampered with.
Yeah, absolutely. Right on the top of the hilltop.
Someone monitors all the time.
Exactly.
Definitely. Thanks, Dr. Bob.
Yeah, thanks so much, Dr. Bob.
We also got some feedback in from Russell Hooper, who says, sad, sad episodes. Did my eyes fool me, or did Crosshair miss the shot at the ship as it left? How do the residents of Pabu not notice yet another ship coming in? Okay, I'm going to rant. Once you remove the 4 to 5 minutes of credits, each of these episodes is only 20 minutes. Not acceptable with what you're charging us, Disney. The previous comment may or not necessarily reflect the opinions or feelings of TV podcast industries, though they should. Will Hunter be angry with Crosshair for following Omega's sacrifice play? It was great seeing my favorite bounty hunter, Cad, a fistful of credits, Bane. Perhaps Ventress will team up with the Batch to save Omega. I doubt it, but that would be fun. It definitely won't happen if Rex shows up with Echo. The first episode just shows how cruelly evil and wicked Palpatine and his empire truly are. Tarkin complaining about costs. Is his Death Star proving to be a bit more expensive than planned already? Maybe he should have backed Thrawn's TIE Defender project instead. Very good, Russell.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, you are absolutely correct, and your eyes didn't deceive you. Mm-hmm. Crosshair did miss the ship. It plopped into the water at the end. So Omega is on the way to Tantis, and the Bad Batch still do not know where Tantis is. Yeah. So it would be interesting to see how that one plays out. Mm-hmm. I love you noticing just the true evil and wickedness of the Empire and Palpatine, but also it is manifest in this objectification and, dare I say it, the accountant-likeness of Tarkin. It's the fact that he just deals everything in numbers.
Yeah.
Nothing is given reality or meaning or emotion.
Yeah.
It is all about the numbers.
So but maybe Russell's decision, right, that the Death Star is costing a lot of money.
I would say it probably is,
and
yeah.
Some of the funds are diverted, was what he specifically said. Some of the funds were diverted by the Empire from their planned, intended place to Dr. Hemlock. So maybe he's just specifically annoyed that that 100 grand or 100 million credits has gone from his plans of the Death Star over to the plans of Hemlock. So, yeah. As for the cost of Disney, I'll be honest, we pay for Paramount Plus, and I don't think I've watched anything on that since the last Star Trek show finished. So that's our fault for paying that. Disney at the moment, we've got this show, of course. We've got The Bad Batch. We've got Extraordinary, which we're watching as well. A great comedy show, which we're really enjoying.
Snowfall, final season of Snowfall.
Yeah, and we've got Shogun, of course. So so we actually do get a lot of bang for our buck for Disney.
Yeah, Disney is fine. It's Paramount.
It's Paramount's the problem. Prime, we've got a lot on there as well. Netflix, we're kind of running out a little bit.
Prime also delivers parcels as well, which is another reason for having Prime.
It does. We just learned that we know what the next animated project that's coming out from Star Wars. Just while we were recording, the trailer for Star Wars Tales of the Empire was announced. Coming, 6 episodes coming on May 4th, of course. May the 4th be with you.
Yes.
So that's not that long away. So just, I think it's the week after the Bad Batch finishes, so the 6 episodes will be out. Tales featuring Morgan Elspeth.
Yes. Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Grand Admiral Thrawn, of course, mentioned by Russell there.
And old Darthy Warthy.
Well, he is in there, but I think the stories themselves feature Barriss Offrey, who was a former Jedi, who was the reason why Ahsoka Tano got kicked out of the Jedi Order or was investigated by the Jedi Order and left the Jedi Order. Yes. So,
yes, becoming an Inquisitor, it would seem.
Exactly, exactly. I think I've got Barriss Offrey's name right. I get really confused because we've got a place in Ireland called Barriss and Offrey. And they do mention her name as Offrey in here, and I think it's Barriss Offrey. So just... I may have to be corrected on that. But anyway, that looks really good. Six episode season coming on May 4th.
Excellent. We also have some feedback from Liza Winrich, who says, "What a twist. The Marauder is destroyed before its Lego set came out. Rest in pieces, Din Djarin's Razor Crest. First, I had my heart melted by the toddler who's cooing. Instantly reminded me how much I miss little Grogu talking. Then I cringed when I heard those familiar bootsteps. Cad Bane is more frighteningly animated than he was in live action. Maybe he mellowed with age. The emotional roller coaster continues when Eva tried to start a conversation with Emery. Could her voice have been any cuter? But I came crashing down, heartbroken, when Eva said Emery had lied to her. And this was only part of the emotional trauma the writers gifted us this week. I can't put into words how I felt when Omega left behind text glasses and Wrecker's plus Omega's Lulu doll. On a positive note, it is always wonderful to hear Stephen Stanton's voice as Tarkin. Saw in the credits that Zeb, Steve Blum, played a stormtrooper and villager number one. We'll have to go back and listen for him."
Great stuff. Thanks, Lisa.
Yes, thanks so much, Lisa. Yeah, I completely agree around the Marauder. I am sure there was a Lego set that came out.
There was. It was called the Bad Batch Attack Shuttle.
Yeah.
It came out a couple of years ago and had just the five members of the Bad Batch. So I think it was to coincide with their appearance in the Clone Wars rather than the Bad Batch TV show.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, it was named the Marauder in this show, as far as I remember, at some point, but it was just called the Attack Shuttle back then.
Grand. Yeah. Okay.
But but the reference there that that Lisa has to Din Djarin's Razor Crest, it was basically that they had put it up for sale, available to buy, and then in the show it got blown up about 2 weeks before that got released to the public. So everybody put their pre-orders in to get his brand new ship, and then it was blown up on the show.
Exactly.
So I wonder, is there a Marauder planned? I wonder,
I hope so. It's a great looking ship.
Yeah, it's a cool ship.
It really is. Mm-hmm. Rest in pieces, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting there, seeing Steve Blum, who played Zeb on Rebels, voicing the Stormtrooper. He's actually been on the credits for the last couple of episodes. Every time we've seen a Stormtrooper, I think it is actually Steve Blum that plays the Stormtrooper voices.
Excellent.
Yeah, they don't do too many of them. We've seen a few of them. They don't get that many lines, but it's great to see him in there. And in an episode where we have Matt Lanter back, who played Anakin Skywalker, as we mentioned, it's kind of cool that they're bringing back some of the old cast from all the different animated shows.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll see more of them in the future. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll see the live action Zeb in Ahsoka.
Yeah, I really hope so.
We have seen him in live action in one episode. I think it was Obi-Wan. I just can't remember. There were so many of them.
Yeah, well, it certainly wasn't Andor.
Yeah.
It certainly wasn't Ahsoka.
Yeah.
I think it
must have been Obi-Wan. Yeah. So hopefully we'll see him back in Ahsoka Season 2 to reunite with the rest of the Rebels that have been appearing in that show.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Or may have been The Mandalorian, of course.
It might have been. Or Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah. In one of those shows.
One of those.
I just can't remember now for the life of me.
But you're totally right, Lace. It's an absolute emotional roller coaster of two episodes this week.
Yeah.
And thanks for the wonderful trauma gifting from the writers this week. Excellent stuff. Thanks so much for the feedback. Please keep sending it in to us. Four more episodes left. You can email us with your thoughts to feedback@tvpodcastindustries.com with any thoughts that you have on the Bad Batch so far, or any of the future episodes, or pop on over to our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/TV Podcast Industries to put your thoughts on the spoiler post on there as well.
Yes. But thank you so much, fellow Batchers, for joining us. We'll be back with our chat about Star Wars The Bad Batch Episode 12 from Season 3, Juggernaut, which is out on April the 10th.
What's the Juggernaut, John? Sounds like they're going to be
a big thing.
Yeah, sounds like it's going to be a bit of a crash.
Big thing, yeah.
Yeah, big thing. Okay, right. No speculation then. Good stuff. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to you again next time.
Yes, thanks so much, fellow Batchers. Until next time, remember to keep watching, keep listening, and of course, keep being bad.
Bye.
Bye.